All right, guys, pictures up.
Pictures up.
Pictures up.
Let's roll sound.
Rolling.
Rolling.
Sound speeds.
Camera speeds. Two. Awesome. Take two. Mark.
Set up.
And
action.
Welcome to the Penn Cinema Podcast, your behind-the-curtain connection for movie news and reviews. Now, here are your hosts, Penn Ketchum and David Moulton.
Welcome to the show. I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum. What's up?
Penn, you're coming live on location at the Effort of Theater, the new Maine.
Reporting live from the new Maine. And I got to tell you, the setup that I had to do to be able to pull this off, not that it was hard, it was really easy. But my point is, like, now that I have this set up, I mean,
it's all like, the time.
I could work all the time. I don't mind. You know what I mean? Like, I got internet now, and I could be watching trailers out here and doing work. And like, I'm in the concession stand on my computer, microphone, everything set up. So, yeah, I mean, this is a game changer for me.
People in Effort don't know that they have a live show. They could just roll right into if they wanted.
Right, right, right. They're in there watching. I mean, it's pretty cool. I have to say, I've been working in Effort all weekend. And so, as you know, we'll go right into this headline.
Yeah.
Empire Strikes Back is the number one film of the week.
That's what's up.
Star Wars might have a future.
Hold your breath.
They might really be onto something
there. It's coming.
But what's really great about it, I mean, we've talked about this on the show a million times. My favorite part of Star Wars is the soundtrack.
Yeah.
So I just leave the door open and listen to the soundtrack. And it's, and especially like, honestly, I feel like episode 4 and 5, and I'd have to listen to see if 6 is the same, but I feel like in episodes 4 and 5, they were much more heavy on like the theme. It's like every 5 minutes, Darth Vader's theme comes on, you know, and whenever Luke comes on the screen, there's that theme, you know? So I feel like they're a little more liberal with their, you know,
they had to let you know what was going on.
Yeah, right.
Those musical cues are super important.
Right. And then later, I guess what, we were sort of more established and we didn't need that little bit of extra help all the time.
Right, right. They saved it for the crucial moments, the the oceans right. of the movie where you're like, oh no, oh my gosh, it's Vader.
So yeah, so anyway, how's your week?
Oh man, it was pretty good. Pretty good. Nothing, I mean, busy, but nothing crazy. Got out to see Return of the King, so we'll talk about that.
Okay.
That was pretty dope. Yeah, just kind of surviving the heat, man. It is. They're trying to roast this COVID right out of us. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
So
you want to get into the big news of the week here with trend of indoor theaters?
Yeah, let's get to it.
So Penn Cinema has announced that we are closing our indoor screens.
Oh.
So there's two important details to make sure that we communicate. This means like we're closing public. There's not going to be any show times, or like we're not opening a certain movie or anything. We're closing what you and I know as normal movie going, but we're still the drive-in in Lititz is still 7 days a week. And we're also doing the bubble screenings that we started in Ephrata and we're continuing in Lititz. It's $100 and it's you and 24 of your friends and you pick whatever movie. What we're doing is we're saying, hey, you rent the room. And you bring your own streaming device. We'll set it up for you. You watch whatever you want.
Nice.
Yeah. So that way we don't have to worry about licensing and, you know, all that jazz. And it just becomes like it's literally just renting the room. And what you do in that room, you can have a business meeting or you can watch home movies or home videos, that kind of stuff. So we've had some really fun people coming in and watching, you know, personal stuff that they always would have thought, you know, they wanted to see on the big screen. So it's pretty cool. It kind of sucks that we're closing down and we'll talk about that in a minute. But what we are doing, the drive-in's open. And also, I think these private events are really cool. I think you and I talked about this when I was doing them in Ephrata.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Like it's a special opportunity that if we had a bunch of wide releases, like July of any other year, You would never, I mean, it would be thousands of dollars for me to rent you a movie theater, you know, in July to watch your home videos.
Yeah. Yeah. How long is the rental for? That's a question people have been asking me.
All day. No, I'm just kidding. I think we have it blocked out into like 3-hour blocks.
Okay, cool.
So, you know, the idea is it's not like you have it all afternoon or all night. But I think, like, for example, if you told me, just for an example, that you wanted to watch, you know, Lord of the Rings and it's a 4-hour movie, we would probably be able to accommodate that.
Right.
But I think our normal block is like 3 hours, with the idea being, you know, that gives us time in between each one to clean it and everything. If we figure a 4-hour block, that gives us an hour between shows, and, you know, that's an 8-hour shift right there.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a cool thing. And I think it's one of those like silver linings, you know, and
I think I anyway, some people who did it yesterday for a bachelor party.
You were?
No, I had some, I knew some people that were going to do it. They told me they were. So I think
nice.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been, I mean, they've been lining up. I mean, we can hardly keep up with them, to be honest.
Nice.
No, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but it is like, we have to like manage the calendar really carefully, because there is the time where we're like, wait a minute, we have more parties than, you know, we know what to do with. So including, have you seen this show on Netflix called Hollywood?
No.
Have you heard about it?
No.
There's a show on Netflix called Hollywood, and Kayla's really into it, and her little friends. And I set them up last night for a midnight show of the conclusion of Hollywood. So so that was fun. But yeah, so, you know, it's interesting, because the reason why Penn Cinema made the decision to close our indoor movies, our traditional movies, the numbers aren't there. I mean, it's simply a question of math.
Right.
And what I started hearing was rumor. And again, I'm not trying to report anything, but I'm just sharing rumors with you, that a lot of industry insiders are saying, first of all, there's no way Regal is going to reopen on July 31st. And when people say Regal, they mean Regal, AMC, Cinemark. It's sort of a generic term for the big chains. So people are saying there's no way Regal opens on July 31st. And there's also quite a bit of speculation that Tenet is going to get pushed back again.
Mm.
So we thought, like, we'll open up July 1st or June 26th or whatever that date was. And we know business is going to be slow, but we're sort of ramping back up for a few weeks until we get to Tenet. And then right around the time we decided to open back up, they pushed all those, you know, Tenet and Mulan out of July and into August. And now what we're hearing on the inside is that those titles are going to get pushed again, and Regal's not going to open. And if we know that if Regal doesn't open, then the studios, you know, they're not going to release a movie just so it can play at Penn Cinema.
Right, right.
Even though they totally should.
I mean, obviously.
Obviously. So here's the quote of the week.
Okay.
I sent a text to a guy who really knows what he's talking about. And I said, on a scale of 1 to 100, what are the chances either Regal opens on July 31st or Tenet opens in August? And he wrote me back one letter, one digit, I should say.
One digit. Okay.
Right. And this is on a scale of 1 to 100. What are the chances that this stuff reopens?
And it was the 100 symbol that the kids like to use.
It was zero.
What?
Yeah. Oof. So, I mean, I honestly, if he had said like 50-50, then I would sort of engage in conversations and speculate. But this is a guy who, like, you know, he's very well connected. He really knows what he's talking about. And I said, what are the on a scale of 1 to 100, what are the chances Regal reopens? And he wrote back zero.
Wow.
So that was stunning to me. And that was a big part of our discussion about, you know, when we made that decision. But honestly, like, just as a person, like, you hearing that news, like, isn't that kind of depressing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't it kind of frustrating?
Yeah. Especially since, I mean, you know, getting out and going to the theater these last 2 weeks, it was so revitalizing. You know what I mean? It was like, ah. This is it.
Right,
this is the deal. But
we're on our way back.
Yeah.
We're wearing our masks and we're sitting apart, but we're on our way back.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. So we had a pretty discouraging day. Of course, you know, really frustrating. And of course, we feel bad for our staff, some of whom are getting laid off again. And that's frustrating. You know, they just came back for a couple weeks. And but people have said to me, like, well, how do you know it's not worth it? Because you've only been back for a couple weeks. And I don't really know how to articulate my answer to that other than to say it's not even close.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like we're not making enough money. The question is not, you know, oh, we're not making enough money. The question is, how much money will we lose, or how much money can we afford to lose? You know,
right.
Like, I just can't afford it. You know, we don't have enough money to just, you know, throw money out the window every day. Like, the numbers aren't even close to what we need just to break even. So we're going to shut it back down for a little while and, you know, try to keep a positive vibe with the private rentals and with the drive-in and, you know, stuff like that. You know, it, as Jerry Seinfeld likes to say, it is what it is. And anybody who knows Seinfeld knows that he hates to say it is what it is. But anyway, speaking of trying to keep it positive, speaking of the drive-in.
Right.
I think we have two new releases coming out, and it shows you what a messed up world we're in, because I now refer to something as a new release, even though it came out on Hulu last week. I mean, yes, that's the world we're living in.
This is a real stretch for you. It's hurting you on the inside, isn't it?
I'm adapting. I'm dying a little on the inside, but I'm adapting.
Now, this is great. So the drive-in is getting Palm Springs, which is a comedy featuring Andy Samberg. And I thought this looked really good. And I'm glad that you're getting it, because I don't have Hulu. And I was like, do I get it for this? Because I'm kind of curious, but will I be disappointed if I get Hulu and it's not good? I mean, I've been hearing some pretty good things about it. But it's kind of like a Groundhog Day thing. Going on with a romantic comedy with a Groundhog Day shtick.
Yeah, I think you know, from what I hear about this, is that it's really funny. It's really good. I don't think anybody is saying it's the funniest movie you've ever seen. Nobody's saying this is, you got to see this movie. But what I'm saying, and it shows you what my basic how hungry I am. It's a new movie. It looks good. It's pretty funny. And it's going to be the drive-in. I think it's going to be like probably a really good fit for the drive-in, because it might be a little bit corny and it might be a little bit, you know, a little tongue-in-cheek, a little cheesy. And with any luck, you know, it'll you know, sort of capture some imagination and let the people at the drive-in have a good laugh.
Yeah.
And then we're also getting a legit new movie.
Okay.
She Dies Tomorrow. Which we're going to talk about that trailer, I think. And I think that's a horror movie that opens on July 31st at the drive-in. And I think it's interesting. I think Neon did I, Tonya. And they also did another one that we discussed last year that we both really liked. And I give Neon kudos for being at the head of the pack. Like, I wonder what other small studios are going to be content not content, that's the wrong word, who are going to look at the drive-in and go, hey, that's an opportunity. Like, we could do something here.
Right. Especially since no one else is really putting anything out for it.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's great fun watching Jaws and Grease and that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's also great fun. Like, I love the thrill of, like, walking into a movie theater and not really knowing what I'm about to see. You know what I mean? Like, the excitement. Like, this could be my new favorite movie. Or it could just be another movie. You know,
let's see.
Like, that's what I'm saying. It's like the anticipation.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I dig it. But you know what's really worth the anticipation?
Is it fast?
It's fast. It's also Furious.
Whoa. And they should call it. They should put that in the title.
Yeah. Fast and Furious 9. So
is it like the second one?
Just like Fast and Furious 2?
Third, fourth, fifth.
Or the eighth, which hasn't even come out yet.
Right.
You know? Fast and Furious 9. I'm sorry. Fast and Furious 9 comes out in April. But Fast and Furious 10, Ludacris had the ludicrous idea to say that they might be going to space, and it's not beyond the reach of the movie. And he said, he kind of said something around the lines of like, when you think of it, it's kind of a natural progression.
Right. Which it totally is.
It totally is. When you do think about it, it's totally a natural progression of the Fast and Furious movies.
I think it's perfect. I think it's absolutely perfect. This is one of the most ridiculous and awesome franchises of all time. And I mean, isn't this the one where they were chasing somebody in a tank and then they attached themselves to a helicopter and swung across a ravine and like, yeah. I don't know. There's like,
yeah. And in the, new one that we have nine, they like swing from one island to another by catching a rope in the car wheel. I mean, it just looks amazing.
Yeah. So I think that, I think this is totally ridiculous, and I'm 100% on board.
Yeah, totally. Go to space. Do it. I want it. As long as they keep cars involved. Like, if they're like, we put some flex tape around the seat and around the windows. We're airtight sealed. We can drive on the moon now. Perfect. Penn's about to spit up his water.
I didn't pick up on how funny that was what you said when you said, as long as they keep cars in it. And I was thinking to myself, of course they're going to keep cars in it. I mean, that's the whole franchise. But then I remembered we were just talking about them being in outer space. So I'm like, exactly like what you just said. Right. Picturing like a lot of duct tape around. Like.
it's like when they went to the Antarctic and they still took sports cars to drive on ice.
Right, right. You know. What would be the best car to take to outer space? Probably not a convertible, right?
Probably not. I'm thinking like a VW Bug.
Oh my God, that's what I was going to say. I swear to God, that was going to be my car.
It looks like a space car already.
Yeah, I mean, you're halfway there.
Whoa, living on a prayer. Sorry.
Either that or like a Volkswagen bus.
Even better.
Like the old school one with the split windshield in front and everything. With the pop-a-top camper.
Why does it...
what if you go to outer space in your camper and you forget to duct tape when you raise the pop-top?
Everyone gets sucked out. I guess what we're saying is Volkswagen is the vehicle of space.
Yeah, it's going to be Fast and Furious 10 is going to be sponsored by Volkswagen.
Well, it's clear that going to space isn't scary, but tell me about something that's really scary. Like that segue there?
David Moulton, ladies and gentlemen, king of the segue. What's up? The Paul Blart himself. All right, so Universal's Monsters movie projects. So in other words, the studio Universal.
Right.
They got all these monster movies, which I think we're all in agreement, right, that they have not lived up to the potential. I mean, to me, this is a rich source, rich with opportunities that they could really hone in on. And I just feel like it's just there's so much fun to be had from all these, you know, stories. So anyway, it seems like Josh Cooley, who was the director for Toy Story 4, which was a pretty great freaking movie.
Right.
Josh Cooley is set to write and direct Little Monsters, which is a live action hybrid monster film that will be produced by Todd Lieberman and David Haberman of Mandeville Films. But I think the important detail that I get out of this story, which is pretty cool, is that Josh Cooley is going to be sort of, I think it's a fair analogy. If you say that Josh Cooley is going to try to do for monster movies what Kevin Feige did for Marvel. Like if he's going to try to sort of come in and organize the studio and get everybody singing off the same sheet of music and doing the right thing and, you know, try to really, you know, I think there's incredible potential here, you know, with this news.
Yeah, I do too. I hope that they need a Kevin Feige to be on top of it. But I thought I heard something similar, and I'm just looking it up here, that had me even more positive about this whole thing. And it involved, let me just find it here, Wolfman, right?
Wolfman Jack?
No, the Wolfman, the monster.
Oh, the Wolfman. Right.
Ryan Gosling's Wolfman.
Yeah.
Which is part of the Universal Monster movie monsters. I might have put this on the notes.
And, yep.
Anyway, it's rumored that they're, not rumored, but they're in talks to have the director from The Invisible Man take over for it. And I'm totally down with that because Invisible Man was good.
Yeah.
Like it was really solid.
It was legit.
So it's like when I hadn't heard this stuff with Josh Cooley, but when I heard that, I thought, well, maybe this guy will be like the Kevin Feige of the movies, but I guess he'd probably be more like the
John Favreau
of the movies. Yeah,
that's a better analogy. But either way, it's good news. I mean, I think that's exciting news. It's going to be really cool to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I'm totally down with that.
Yeah. Yep.
If we can get a good series of monster movies in, like, that's really optimistic. And not one that's like hokey, over-the-top action like they have been trying to do and kind of failing at. Like, this could be really cool.
Yeah. I agree. I think this is great news, and it'll be fun to see it take shape.
Let me tell you something that I'm actually kind of excited for.
Talk to me.
Because I love this actor. Even when he doesn't do a good job, I still think he's really charming. Jude Law is in talks to play Captain Hook in Disney's live-action Peter Pan. Now, I know what you're saying is, Dave, we've had a lot of Peter Pan movies, and they're not that great.
Right.
But this is Disney's Peter Pan. So it's like not just the Peter Pan story. It's an adaptation of their animated version, which everyone loves. So it's not like, let's take Peter Pan and make it dark and grim and, you know, well, let's do an origin story. No. It's the animated story. Jude Law, I think, is perfect for Captain Hook. He's charming. He's conniving. He can do it all. So he's just a dreamboat. That's what you told me earlier.
I said that in private, David.
Oh, man, it wasn't on the record.
I mean, he's got a full plate. I think if you're a Jude Law fan, which I agree with you, charming is a funny word. He was awesome in Grand Budapest Hotel, which we watched the other day.
Yeah.
Didn't we watch that last week?
Yep.
And he's also rumored to be in Megalopolis. And he's in pre-production on Sherlock Holmes 3. He was he's in pre-production on Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them 3. A lot of third ones in here. And he's got two movies coming out in 2020, which clearly are not coming out in 2020, The Nest and The Rhythm Section. So my point in all of this is that if you're a Jude Law fan, I think the next couple of years are going to be really fun.
Yeah. And here's the good thing about this movie. Disney has come back and said they fully plan to release this movie theatrically and not go straight to Disney Plus.
Yeah, they're no dummies. I mean, they know the right way to watch a movie. They know.
I feel like there was a lot of doubt in that. Yeah.
You know, I think if.
But look, they held back Mulan. They put Artemis, what's the one they've done? Artemis Fowl. Like, come on.
Right.
Was anybody going to come to the theater to see Artemis Fowl?
Probably not.
You're right. Exactly.
Okay. We have a little bet going. You know how I often take bets just because somebody says something and then I...
uh-huh.
Do tell. So... Drew and I have, he's, as you know, our highly respected and esteemed director of operations. He oversees all the Penn Cinema operations, incredibly smart guy, knows what he's talking about. He thinks Mulan is going to end up streaming on Disney Plus.
Ooh.
Podcast at PennCinema.com. Is Mulan going to make it to a theatrical release, or will it ultimately? Now, here's the thing. Or will it ultimately go to theaters? Now, here's the thing. I think that if you had asked me this question a month ago, shit, even if you had asked me this 2 weeks ago, I would have said 100% it holds on to theaters. The longer, like, for example, if Tenet gets pushed back again, which now studios are not, they're pushing titles and not picking release dates.
Yeah.
And I read a really interesting interview. I forget what, where it was, might've been Variety. It might've been New York Times. Somebody was talking to a studio head and he was saying it used to be that when a studio picked a date, that was like the end of it, under the, like you put a stake in the ground and there was never any discussion about moving that stake. And now he said, like, there's no stakes. Like, nobody puts a stake in the ground because there's no stakes. Like, everybody is in limbo. And I feel like if Tenet gets pushed again, I predict two things. First of all, I don't think it will get pushed with a release date.
Yeah, I bet you're right.
And then second of all, I think if Tenet gets pushed again, then Drew is right and Mulan will go streaming, because Disney already has, and all the studios do, Christmas, December and November are already really crowded from all the spring movies that got pushed back. I mean, November and December, if people feel comfortable coming back to the movies and if we're not, you know, dealing with quarantine type of stuff, just from the titles alone, it's the busiest November and December that I've ever come across, that I've ever looked ahead to. So I don't know, if you push Tenet back again, where do you push it to? September? Maybe.
Right.
I mean, that would be the biggest September of all time. So the question is, does Mulan make it to a theatrical run? And you just reported that Captain Hook, Disney is committed to releasing this in a theatrical release. To which I would say, of course they are. They want to make money. And nothing I've ever said about studios. See now, David, you got me all fired up again. You got me all upset and on my soapbox. I can't stand it. But there's just no change. I don't care. Pandemic, quarantine, COVID, face mask, whatever. It doesn't change the fact that a theatrical release makes more money for studios than streaming does.
Yeah.
And there are already multi-$100 million movies that have already spent hundreds of millions of dollars to get made, that the only way they recoup that money is coming into theaters. So I just feel like, I believe that Disney will stand by that as a theatrical release. I'm nervous about Mulan, but I still don't think the world has changed. I don't know, like, I'm not ready. I know we're living in a weird time, but I just feel like this weirdness is not going to last forever. Like, there will be new movies back in theaters. It might not be in August, might not even be in September, but they'll come back.
Right.
So I don't know. So I think Disney is smart to right out of the gate talk about this being a theatrical release.
I think. They hold on to Mulan. They've held on to it this long. I think they keep – I feel, yeah, if they were going to break, they would have broke by now.
That's a good point.
And here's the thing. So let's take a little side note here. I think that the studios need to really pace themselves. Like, I mean, when it's time to come out with new movies, come out with new movies. But give them some time to breathe, because a lot of people are like, oh, once the movies start up, they're back up. What you're not realizing is – well, I mean, maybe they are, but nobody's making movies during this time. So
right.
Is it better to have a longer drought now than to have a drought and then all of a sudden there's a ton of movies and then all of a sudden there's no movies again for 6 months? Like, why not space it out so while you're making new content, you're showing the stuff that you have? And maybe it's not, you know, super high peaks like it would have been if you were just like, boom, 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 but you're still making money.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I think just looking at movie habits, like, even the biggest movie fan is not going to go out to the movies every single Saturday from November 1st to January 2nd.
Right.
You know, even the big, you know, biggest movie fan. So, you know, whatever. I think your point is really well made. I also think that, and I've said this on the show before, but in that same article that I was reading, I heard the guy articulate, he used a word that sort of summarizes what I think I had said, which is it's blockbusterization. It's not even a real word, but In other words, you know, it's the bigger and bigger movies, like we talked about, you know, if you spend $200 million on a movie, there's no way you're going to get that back if you go streaming, you know, but so you're going to have to go theatrical releases, where more and more of the small movies might, you know, end up going streaming. So this right. just sort of continues to push that trend.
Right. But to argue that those smaller movies might make more money now if they come yeah. out, if they come out while everyone, you know.
Well, and I'd love to see them come out to drive-ins, yeah. you know, in the meantime.
Yeah.
All right. We got back talking about this again.
All right.
Oh, I'm exhausted.
Tell me about Vivica A. Fox.
Vivica A. Fox. This was like, have you ever like talked to your friend and they say something like your friend is single and you're talking about like a picnic on Sunday and your friend is like, yeah, that's cool. I'll bring my wife, you know, and hot dogs and some beer, you know, and some chips. And you're like, wait, what? And he's like, the hot dog. No, before the hot, your wife, you're married. So here's the story.
Happens to me all the time.
The story is Vivica A. Fox was added to the official list of many who have proposed sequel ideas for Quentin Tarantino's classic double feature, Kill Bill. Wait, David, I did not know that this was a thing. I did not know that we were talking about a Kill Bill sequel.
This is one of those things that, like, I feel, you know how when you're talking to your friend that you just found out had a wife?
Right.
And you've gone over all the things that you had to talk about that, you know, it's kind of like a lull in the conversation. And there's one thing that you guys have in common that you can always fall back on, right? But nobody really was going to go anything, like, really cares about, you know, like cars or sports. It's just like,
right.
Hey, I got an idea for a new Kill Bill movie. I feel like that's what this is.
Yeah, you might be right. So in other words, you're saying it's just chatter.
Yeah, I feel like we hear about this every couple months or years, and then it's always like, what would they, you know? It always devolves into, well, what? How many movies will Quentin Tarantino do? And does this count as, this, you know, a one or two? Or
did you love Kill Bill?
Okay, I loved Kill Bill at the time. I think like 2 or so years ago, I tried to rewatch it, and I was like, whoosh, my sensibilities have changed. And it was, I don't know, it was too violent or something. Or I was like, man, what has happened to me?
David, I didn't even know you had sensibilities.
That's
And now they're changing?
Yeah, man. It's an ever-changing landscape. When I got the wife.
You went down to Costco with your wife?
Yeah.
And picked up some sensibilities?
Hot dog, buns, sensibility.
Did you get like a 12-pack to last you a couple years?
Yeah, that's why I can change it.
Okay.
It was all a right. variety.
I don't know. I guess I'm not quite as dramatic, but a similar experience. Like when Kill Bill first came out, I loved it. I bought the DVD or the Blu-ray or whatever. The media, it was as soon as it was available, I bought it.
Yeah.
And I've rewatched it a few times since, and I've enjoyed it. I think I probably enjoyed it maybe more than you, because I did watch the whole thing and did enjoy it. But I will say it was definitely one of those things where, like, when it came out, I loved it. And in rewatching it, I just kind of liked it.
Well, let me clarify. Like, I rewatched Kill Bill like 20 some times. Like, I loved it. And then I took a long break. And then it was coming back to it only very recently that I was like, there's too much violence in this movie.
So you have now prompted me to use one of my all-time favorite phrases. Uh-huh. Like when I'm making fun of a movie, uh-huh. I like to say it offends my delicate sensibilities.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What do you got about J.J. Abrams?
Hey, look.
Surely he's doing something.
He must, right? There's a rumor that he's looking to make a new Constantine film. And that Keanu Reeves could come back to reprise the role. How do you feel about that?
I'm sorry. Were you saying something?
You're so excited you don't have words.
Right. I'm speechless. I don't know. Is this more or less significant rumor than Vivica A. Fox reporting a Kill Bill sequel.
Well, here's the thing. Did you like Constantine?
It's all right. I did not love it. Like, I watched it, and I guess you would say that I enjoyed it. But no, I have no need to rewatch it.
Right.
I've never rewatched it from after the first time I saw it.
I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I didn't hate it. I just didn't really get. But I have people tell me how they love this movie all the time.
Really?
Even literally last night, someone said that they loved Constantine to me. And they were like, I really want to see more movies like that. And I was like, okay. Like, legit, that happened in a conversation I was having last night.
Wow.
Yeah. So, Constantine is currently becoming more and more famous. He is a DC superhero. I don't know if you know that.
I did not.
And he is part of what they call the Dark Justice League, which is the Justice League of characters that deal with magic and the occult and stuff. Along those lines, Bad Robot, J.J. Abrams' production company, is also talking about making a Zatanna film. Zatanna is another DC superhero, part of the Dark Justice League, and Constantine's lady love.
Ooh.
She dresses like a magician, and she does magic.
Interesting.
And I think that they could, if they do it right, they have really interesting characters, and if they build them up on their own, DC could finally have like a good superhero team up that works. If they do it right. Look at the smile on your face.
What I'm smiling about is how many times I'll bet you we could, if we had like a computer program that could like capture this. this is our 77th episode.
It's crazy.
And I guarantee there have been at least 77 times when somebody has muttered. I'm not even saying every single week, but I'm saying more than on average once a week, somebody has muttered the phrase, if Warner Brothers gets this right, we could have a good blah, blah, blah. Like, all right. So, yeah. So here we are again with another like opportunity. And I'm not trying to be a jerk about it, but I'm just saying, like, the fact is, like, here we are again. DC, again, you know, taking a stab at it. And don't get me wrong. I think that's exciting. I think that's really cool. And J.J. Abrams has all credibility in the world, so maybe he's the first guy to actually step forward with it. But when you were making that comment, that's why I was grinning, because I was like, well, we've heard this before.
Yeah. The thing that gives me a little bit more hope here is these movies – and J.J. Abrams, with some of his reboots or re-envisioning of film, he makes them a little bit more gritty, a little bit more real, or whatever. Right. Specifically these characters deal with the dark and gritty, so it fits their M.O., as opposed to taking, like, Superman and trying to get him to be that kind of feel. Like, these characters are already there, so it might work a lot easier to do this. But what would be cool to me is if they do these dark and gritty characters like this, and then they make Superman come in, but they keep him bright and shiny, and then you get that real Superman feel of like how Superman is the Boy Scout, and he's really pure, and he's just like really, you know, the boring stuff that we talked about last week that you don't want to see on screen. You take that character and bring him into this world you've established that's not pretty, and it really would give you a cool feel for Superman. Anyway, that's just if it works.
But. All right. So we are now, in the fourth phase of the MCU?
Phase four, right? I think.
So director Kate Shortland has confirmed that Black Widow, I'm blanking. I was just talking about her a minute ago. Who plays Black Widow?
Who plays Black Widow?
Yeah, I was just talking about it. I can picture my mind went completely blank.
Natalie Portman.
Scarlett Johansson.
No, you didn't fall for it. Take it.
What did you do?
I said Natalie Portman. I was waiting for you to be like, okay, yeah.
Director Kate Shortland confirmed that Black Widow will hand the baton to Florence Pugh's Yelena Belova. How do you say that?
I think you nailed it.
Yelena Belova in an interview with Empire, presumably indicating that Yelena will become the Marvel Cinematic Universe's current Black Widow going forward. I think that's really exciting news. I think Florence is hot shit. I think she's really talented. I love watching her. And Scarlett Johansson has done awesome as a Black Widow. But I mean, it's clear from her interviews, like she's willing to... You know, it's not like the type of thing.
Don't forget, she died.
Yeah, but they're going back.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this is like handing. This is like for future films. You could still have a Black Widow, but it would be Florence Poe.
Right, right. I don't know. I'm confusing the subject here, but I just think it's a classy move on Scarlett's part that she's kind of like, you know, hey, do your thing. You know, she's a cheerleading and supporting the new direction. It's awesome.
I think it's awesome. I think Florence, she's great at what she does. She looks great in the trailers for the action stuff. And I think it's right now I'm like fully on board. The funny thing that came to mind when I read this was I wonder how long they will make her keep that thick accent that she has in the trailers. Because they did the same thing with the Scarlet Witch, where she had a thick accent at the beginning, and then the next movie, gone. She is just English.
Maybe people don't want to listen to that thick accent for a whole film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Charlize Theron.
Yeah, she's in the old. Let me see. I don't know this article or anything. I'm going to read what you wrote. Charlize Theron in Old Guard and talking maybe Atomic Blonde 2. Old Guard's a movie?
Old Guard is a movie premiering on Netflix.
Okay. All right. Okay. And she wants to do Atomic Blonde 2.
Right.
Yeah. And
then what did I write after Thank You, Netflix?
You know I'm a big fan of Netflix and stuff.
So what I wanted to talk about on this is It's similar to like what we talked about earlier in this episode. Like I have to like rethink, you know, my whole like problem with Netflix, because I think that Charlize Theron is making Old Guard it's available now on Netflix. And from what I hear, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm excited to see it soon. And now in an interview where she was promoting Old Guard, she was talking about an Atomic Blonde sequel, which I think makes perfect sense. I bet you the sequel is going to come out similar to The Irishman. I think it's going to be a Netflix release that gets a theatrical release. And I'll tell you right now, I'll play it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I loved Atomic Blonde, and if there's going to be a sequel, I'm all about it. And she also said she thought there would be a sequel to Old Guard, but I feel like she's getting a little ahead of herself. So I think this is for fans of Charlize in these action movies, then that's big news. And I think it's also a step in the right direction for Netflix in terms of, you know, supporting movies that can kind of like The Irishman, you know, have a theatrical release and then move on, you know, maybe more quickly than traditionally to the streaming platform.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't know. I just wanted to tell everyone there's going to be an Atomic Blonde 2. That's really the most.
and you're super excited.
Everything else is irrelevant.
Hey, let's move on trailers. You ready for this?
I'm ready, baby.
So we're going to talk about Palm Springs. A little bit. We kind of talked about it already. This is a trailer I left off week after week after week because it would come up and say Hulu. And I was like, oh, man. Oh, well. I can't put it on there because I know Penn will flip his lid and tell me to turn the podcast off and go home crying.
Somebody will have a temper tantrum if you put streaming trailers on there.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a good trailer. I like the idea of... It's like Groundhog Day, but then this girl gets brought in only to realize that there's other people who have been stuck in the loop ahead of her, and she's new to it, but they've been just dying over and over and over again.
I don't know if anybody cares, but we sometimes talk about a trailer. This trailer definitely is worth watching, the Palm Springs trailer.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the show yet, so I don't know if it's as funny as the trailer looks, but I think this trailer looked really is refreshing sort of the wrong word? Like it felt safe. It felt comfortable. It wasn't like groundbreaking. It wasn't like stressful. It looked like a good right down the middle fastball comedy.
Yeah.
Next up we have She Dies Tomorrow, which this looks scary as hell. Do you believe, like, I believe that where people say like, I'm scared this is going to happen and I'm worrying about it because you said it. Like, I will definitely not say things because I don't want to breathe life into them.
Right, right. And this is, so the idea behind this movie, She Dies Tomorrow, is there's a girl, a lady, who thinks that she's going to die tomorrow. But her fear, we don't know if she actually does die, her fear is contagious. So anyone she says, I think I'm going to die tomorrow, catches the idea that they think they're going to die tomorrow, and then anyone they tell that to continues the fear or spreading of the and the movie's unclear if the people actually die or not.
People who are huge horror fans are gonna tell me that this has been done in some other form or whatever.
Sure.
But I don't really remember what I feel like I have a vague memory that I've seen something similar to this, but I think it looks interesting. Like, I definitely would watch it.
It's kind of like, you know, The Ring or It Follows, yeah, or any one of those things where you pass a curse along. But
right,
the thing here is it's very ambiguous of whether or not these people are actually dying or if it's just a contagious idea, a mental condition.
Right.
That spreads.
You know who dies?
Who?
The people in Halloween Kills.
What?
There's no ambiguity there. Those guys are goners.
Who's the king of segues now? What's up? So, Halloween Kills, it's just a teaser. From what I understand, at the end of Halloween, the last one, they kind of, I don't know, they do something to him and they leave him in a house that's burning and they escape. So all the trailer is, and I thought this was really great for a trailer, all the trailer is them escaping and then they see emergency services going to put the fire out and they're just screaming, let it burn, because it was the only way to kill him.
So. I think that's wild. I think that was a brilliant trailer. This isn't like my... you know, top of my list movies that I want to see, but I thought the trailer in its, I always enjoy a trailer where they essentially are just taking a small slice of the movie.
Right.
And it sort of tells you what's going on. I think that's cool. I think it's a cool trailer. Yeah, I don't know. To me, this is like whatever, but yeah, I'll definitely watch it when it comes out.
Now, this movie creeped me out the most of all the films that we watched. It's called The Vigil. And it's about the Jewish practice. There's a word for it they put at the beginning, and I don't remember what it is, of watching a body from when it's dead to when it's buried. And the idea that there's a dead body and there's a haunting in the house with the body, and maybe once you enter this house, you can't ever leave it. Something like that. That was the part, I mean, it was creepy enough inside the house, but what it got really creepy is the lady who lives in the house is like, if you leave, the house will make you crawl back to it. And they show the guy outside, like, struggling on the sidewalk to like, get back to the house. It was intense.
Obviously, we have no idea when this movie is going to come out.
Right.
But I hope it comes out at a time when there's something else more interesting so that we don't have to watch this movie on the show, because it sounds scary and I feel like I'm going to have bad dreams just from watching the trailer.
Yeah, because I watched the trailer last night and I was like, am I making a mistake within the first 30 seconds?
Yeah, I watched a trailer just like an hour ago in broad daylight, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't watch this trailer. It's called The Vigil. If you're into the scary kind of stuff, then you'll probably love it.
Here's one that I snuck on here after we started recording because I forgot to put it on. It's called Boy State. And I encourage you to go check out this trailer. It's a documentary that's coming to Apple TV Plus and theaters, according to the trailer. Oh, boy. But the idea is that in Texas, I don't know, like 100 or so or a ton of teenage boys come together to do a mock running of government, and then they hold an election for who would be the governor out of the boys. And it's kind of like following these kids and their like kooky ideas of what government is and how it's run and how to manipulate people to vote for them and stuff. And the critics are really raving about it. The trailer is really interesting. Looks like, I mean, I'm not super political man or whatever, but I thought it looked like it would be an interesting watch. Just a kind of a real life take on Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. This is a trailer, right? The movie's not out yet?
From what I understand, it's not out yet. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Cool. Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. But you know what really sounds interesting? Is the review for this week's movie, which is Rat Race from 2001. Penn, did you watch this movie?
You know I did, baby.
Oh, yeah. He's dancing just like they do in the opening.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you would mention the opening because that's what I wanted to lead off with. I watched this movie with my whole fam.
Oh, wow.
Marley Bear, Kalo, and Amy, all – that's how you pronounce her name. A lot of people think it's pronounced Kayla, but it's actually pronounced Kalo. And so we watched it together, and it was kind of – no, it wasn't kind of fun. It was totally fun because yours truly kept a running commentary throughout the entire – and the first thing that I had to comment on was – the opening title sequence must have listed every bastard that had anything to do with the movie, like catering by Bob Jones, you know, the gaff boy, Dylan Wanger, like just every, didn't it feel like the opening credits went on like forever?
At one point, like it's everyone who's in the main cast. And then there's just a guy who's pulling a rope and names are just falling down and you don't know who they go to. You're like, okay.
I mean, I'll give them credit for the creative. I mean, it was kind of a cool opening sequence. It was very creative and kind of set a nice tone and sort of got you comfy cozy to watch this movie as opening credits are supposed to do. But after it drag on, like 35 minutes later when we're still in opening credits, I'm like, is this movie ever going to start?
Oh,
you know?
My God. Oh, it's great.
So I also, as I was getting the movie set up, one of my beloved children said to me, "Dad, wait, why are we watching this movie?" And I was like, you know, that's a reasonable question. Let me ask David. David, remind me, how did we get on this?
Well, Chris Hall Productions recommended that we watch this movie because he and I in 2001 lost our minds laughing at this movie, right? We were just like beside ourselves. Everyone needs to go see Rat Race. It's just
I totally remembered why we were watching the movie. I just wanted you to call out Chris Hall.
Yeah. And he, well, at least he openly admitted when he told me, he's like, I don't know if it holds up because let me tell you, it doesn't. And I'm watching this movie and I'm like, why did I think this was funny? Like, where was I in life? It's like when you look back at a trauma, like you were dating an abusive person or something. And
you're like,
what was I thinking?
You know, the two movies, and now I'm forgetting one of them, but there were two movies that we kept coming back to. Did you see that movie with Robin Williams called RV?
No, I kept away from it.
Yeah, rightly so. Now, we watched it because when it came out, my kids were younger and it was sort of appropriate for them. But this movie reminds me a lot of RV. Like, it's totally ridiculous. It makes no sense whatsoever. And there was another equally dumb movie that we compared it to, and I'm blanking on that now. But I don't know. Like, it was the perfect – I totally agree. It does not hold up. I would not recommend it to people. With all due respect to you and Chris Hall Productions. But what I will say is that we had a good time.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like, yeah, it's not a good movie, but we had a good time watching it. Like, we did laugh. It was funny. Like, Cuba Gooding Jr. was great. Mr. Bean was great. It was fun. And then Marley and I, which we'll talk about later, we watched a movie called Long Dumb Road, which, again, we'll talk about in a minute. But Long Dumb Road, they end up in Silverton, New Mexico, Silver City, New Mexico, just like Rat Race. So I felt like it was like one of those Matrix moments where everything, like, you know,
coming together.
So I don't know. That's my take on Rat Race. Is like, it's not a great movie, but I have to say we did have fun. Like, you know, it's ridiculous. So you just, we had fun watching it.
So many names, so many big 90s, early 2000s names in this movie.
How did they get all those people into that movie?
I don't know. It's crazy.
So one comment that I wanted to make that the girls didn't really notice or care. This movie came out 5 years after Cuba Gooding Jr. was in Jerry Maguire.
Wow.
Isn't that – now, I know that Cuba Gooding Jr. has made some great movies. But isn't that like – I felt like it was a little bit sad. Like, he had – he was like at the top of his game,
yeah.
You know, and then 5 years later, he's making Rat Race.
Yep. And how much longer till he did Snow Dogs or whatever?
Right. Right. Know? Yeah. Highlight of the movie for me was Mr. Bean.
Oh yeah, he's the best part. Yeah.
I'm in a race.
Oh look, a drifter. Let's kill him.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Yeah, Mr. Bean was definitely the best. I laughed at certain parts, like things that I didn't think I would, but overall it was very bland. This movie was so early 2000s, and the part that captured it the most, oh look, it's Smash Mouth.
Right. I like that line because you could tell, like, if it was somebody who was actually famous, like anybody who was not 12 years old in 2001 would not know who Smash Mouth was.
Right.
Like, I did because, you know, I had kids, you know, that were age appropriate for that.
Yeah.
But, like.
But you couldn't pick him out of a lineup.
Exactly. So if it was like Mick Jagger walking in or somebody even more famous or Lady Gaga or whatever, they would just walk in and everybody in the movie would be like, ah, crazy. But the director obviously felt like we need to tell the audience who this rock star was.
Right.
We need to write that into the script.
Now, let me ask you this. Did you watch through the absolutely stunning end credit sequence, or did you stop the movie immediately?
No, I think I did.
Did you catch? So it's like the credits roll over everybody singing with Smash Mouth.
Right.
Singing All Star, whatever that song is.
Yeah.
And they thought it would be wise to have when anytime they focused on a character, that you would then hear that actor's bad singing of the song while it was happening. I was like, why?
Right. That's in the list of like bad decisions by the production team.
Yeah. If they get to Whoopi Goldberg and she sounds so phoning it in.
Was it in the credits when they were crowd surfing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. Like, you could tell some of the actors actually did it, and then some of the actors did not, because those were the ones who were face down.
Right, yeah.
Like, if they had a stunt double, they went into the crowd face down.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, so Rat Race 2001, not on board, I don't think.
You know what here's what I want for our listeners to hook me up with. I want a comedy that I've never seen.
Ooh.
I want a comedy that I'm not going to, you know.
You just had that this week, though. You never seen Rat Race, right?
No, an actual comedy.
Oh. Something that's funny, David.
Right. And that's what I want you and I to watch is a comedy starring Steve Martin that I read this. I've seen this movie a million times. Because remember back when we all watched you watched VHS, right? Back in the day.
Yeah.
So if you owned a certain VHS tape, maybe you didn't have HBO. I did not have HBO growing up. So we had a little collection of VHS tapes, and that was like,
that's it.
In that collection, that's it. So I watched it, Big Chill, a million times, Death by Murder or something, Murder by Death or something like that. And there was a Steve Martin movie called Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. And I have not seen it since I was probably 15 years old. But it came across my radar the other day because it was on a list of like noir comedy sort of oddball movies that I thought would be interesting for you and I to watch on the show and talk about next week. So are you down for that? You up for Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So next week we're going to review Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, but also, dear listener, shoot me a comedy podcast at penncinema.com. Hook me up with a movie that cracks you up that maybe I didn't. So spoiler alert, I saw Hangover. I saw all of Eddie Murphy's comedies.
What?
I've seen everything he's ever done. I've seen everything Bill Murray's ever done. Hook me up with a funny movie that maybe I didn't see. I would love a gem. And a little, you know, a hidden gem of a comedy that's really funny that maybe I didn't see yet. Podcast at penncinema.com. I dare you.
Ooh, a double dog dare you.
Double dog dare. Yeah, I did see Christmas Story. Hey, do all our listeners know we're doing Christmas in July at the drive-in?
Well, I think we talked about it, but I don't know.
Did we talk about it? Okay, good.
Yeah. All right. We said we should put fake snow everywhere.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm still working on that.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to listener notes, questions, and answers. So this week we heard from Connor, not Connor. Once again, he said he saw Forrest Gump, and it might be the most quotable movie ever.
No, I think he said.
Oh, he never saw Forrest Gump.
He was chiming in on iconic movies that he's never seen, and he said he had never seen Forrest Gump.
That's
and
right.
I said, I think Forrest Gump is one of the most quotable movies of all time, including, what, Caddyshack, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Christmas Vacation. Those are my top three most quotable movies. Forrest Gump, There's My Boat. Caddyshack, It's in the Hole. And Christmas Vacation, take your pick. I would just – the blessing is the one that always jumps to my mind. But – hopefully not Connor has seen by the time he's listening to this. Connor, not Connor. Here's the thing. I hold you in very high regard. You're my man. I got you.
What's up?
Right? You're on the Rushmore of listeners. But if you write me in and say you never saw Forrest Gump, I feel like there's a solemn obligation. You got to go watch Forrest Gump. So, I challenge you. I want to hear, what'd you think? Did it hold up? Was it funny to you?
Yeah.
I mean, when it came out, it was an incredibly popular movie. Everybody loved Tom Hanks at the top of his game.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. All right. So Chris Hall Productions also wrote in a very nice – you know when people write in very nice notes?
Yeah.
And then somehow it leaves you scratching your head. So the two words, that would be funny. That would be a fun thing to have people write in. Just two words to describe the Penn Cinema podcast. Chris Hall Productions takes the lead and has started has accepted this challenge. Chris Hall wrote us a very nice, very thoughtful, pleasant email thanking us for being, and I quote, odd and ridiculous.
What does okay. that mean? I guess.
You're welcome. I don't know.
You left handsome and hilarious off?
Right. Fascinating and captivating?
Yeah. Yeah. You also thanked us for watching Lord of the Rings or having Lord of the Rings in the theater. Thank you.
I think we got a lot of comments. And I think he was the only one that wrote into the podcast, but I got a lot of emails from regular customers coming in who really, I think it was a lot of fun having Lord of the Rings and having the extended editions. And we got a lot of positive feedback from people who were really excited to see the extended edition.
Yeah. We had a great time. You know,
yeah.
we were like, got out of work early to go see it on Wednesday. We were like, all right, we're walking
nice.
Out. All our coworkers are like, what are you guys leaving at the same time for? We got plans.
Got plans, baby. We're working.
Yeah.
All right. Now, listen, we have something very serious.
Oh, my word.
David.
Let me sit down.
David. This this is a serious situation.
No joke.
This is no fooling around.
Okay.
Because the mystery gobble wrote in.
Oh my gosh.
Now, before I get to his email, which is very serious and may or may not include an apology on my part, I also have to express some serious concern to you.
Uh-oh.
I am worried because more than once this week, I was in either social or semi-social. I was in events that were not work-related where people talked to me about the podcast.
People that you didn't know listened?
I think people are listening, and I feel like, shit, I got to, like, remember what I said, and, like, I have these opinions about stuff. And, you know, a lot of times, my opinion is what you would call fluid. So I'm on the show saying one stupid thing, and then I'm out at the grocery store saying some other stupid thing, and they're like, oh, well, on the podcast, you said X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But what I'm really thinking to myself is, oh, dear God, you're listening to the show. This is super awkward. All right. So back to the gobble.
Well, what's best, Penn, is when people come up to you or they text you as they're listening a week or two later. Right. And they're like, oh, I can't believe that you thought that was blue. And I'm like, what?
Right. I like, and this, I know, because you and I both see the emails, I like listeners who write in, like, multiple times while they're listening to one episode. One show. That's my favorite. They, like, write in, and let me tell you what I think. And then later in the show, they're like, oh, but you just said, oh. All right, so back to the gobble, the mystery gobble himself. As you may or may not recall, some number of weeks ago. Now, I hold the mystery gobble in high regard. He's one of my favorite people in the world. But he sends us in these links, right? Sends us in clips.
Sometimes with little to no, like there's nothing to go with it. It's just like, hey, here's...
Okay. Out of the blue, here's a link, you know, whatever. Which, I love getting them, right? But a number of weeks ago, I said, I wonder if he is even listening to the show. Like, is he a fan or is he a friend? Right? Like, is he really listening to the whole show or does he just like us and think we'd be interested to hear about, you know, the latest news on Caddyshack? So I have to apologize because to his credit, the mystery gobble has listened to every single show the entire way through. And what was the quote? I think the quote was, his undying quest, the search for signs of intelligent life, having yielded little to no results, he's still committed to listening in the hopes of one day hearing something interesting.
Right.
Hearing some kind of intelligent life. And God bless you, you know, on a scale of 1 to 100.
Zero.
Zero.
I think the mystery gobble sees himself as more of a martyr. Someone's got to listen. Why not him? He'll take the fall.
He'll take a hit for the team. So good for you. So thanks for listening, dude. And we're gonna send you over 5 pounds of bacon as a reward for your faithful service to the community.
Oh my word! All right, let's get into what are you reading, what are you watching, what are you doing, how you living life.
Well, I had a busy week, so my list is pretty short, but I finished Marcella. I highly recommend it. The girls and I also watched one of those Netflix game shows called Awake, which was, like, mildly amusing. It's the kind of game show – it's the kind of program that's, like, good to put on when you're all on the couches but, like, also on your phones.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You're, like, you're just chilling and you're kind of doing other stuff, but it's funny over there. It's called Awake. The contestants have to stay awake for 24 hours, and then after the 24th hour, that's when the game show gets filmed, and they have to do these, like, tasks. And it's really funny because, like, they don't have good hand-eye coordination, and some of them are goofy and whatever. The show's funny. But Marley and I had a really fun evening the other night. We watched this movie called Night Clerk, and it was awful. It was nothing like what either of us wanted. And I'll put it to give you some perspective. Like, we were just talking a few minutes ago about rat race.
Yeah.
If you're trapped and somebody has a gun to your head and you have to watch Rat Race or Night Clerk, I would pick Rat Race 1,000 times.
Wow.
Like, Night Clerk was just kind of boring and it didn't go anywhere and it had a dumb ending and it had a great premise. But we immediately, like, moments later, just clicked on a comedy. Both of these shows are on net, or both of these movies are on Netflix. We did not like Net Clerk, but then we clicked on a comedy of Long Dumb Road, which was, I'm not saying like the all time best or whatever, but it was good. It was where I recommend it. Like, it's a good, funny comedy. It stars two guys who I don't remember, but you know them. Like, if you go on Netflix and look at Long Dumb Road, you'll be like, oh yeah, that kid. The one kid was the one who played the lobby boy in Grand Budapest Hotel.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So we love him. Easy to watch. Fun movie. So, and then I also, so Night Clerk, don't watch it. Long Dumb Road, good, solid, middle of the road comedy. And then I also watched one of my favorite movies, Casino Royale.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. What have you been up to?
Well, this week.
Well. Well.
This week I watched Return of the King, which was amazing. It was also Bond night because the 7th happened. Cool, so man. We watched Die Another Day. Do you remember this movie?
I do. I had to quick look at the poster because the new one coming out is No Time to Die.
Right. Yeah. Die Another Day is the one with Halle Berry. And we're watching this movie, right?
Oh.
And we're like, good, like half hour into it, and we had all like the host Roland, our buddy Roland, he had never seen it, or he couldn't remember it because he had seen it before, and all of us have been saying how it was so bad, and we're about 30-40 minutes in, he's like, this movie is actually not bad, like I don't get it, it's and all of us are like, well, you know, you're kind of right, but just wait. And then the minute Halle Berry comes on screen and the first scene is over, he's like, he just turns over, Roland goes, it's really amazing how much of a turn this movie made in one scene from good to totally horrible.
So, yeah. I don't know. I have to say, and this might get me some hate mail, I did not love James Bond until Daniel Craig came along.
I think a lot of people are probably with you.
I liked James Bond, and I certainly went and saw him at the movie theaters and enjoyed them, and I liked them, and blah blah blah. But it wasn't—I wasn't like Mr. James Bond. And ever since Daniel Craig took over, I've been 100% on board.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of people are with you. I've actually talked to a lot of people who only know Daniel Craig as
Bond. Yeah.
So I've also started reading Queen of Shadows by Sarah J. Maas, and I'm really enjoying it. It's book 4 in the series of Throne of Glass, and it's really good. If you like fantasy, you should check out the series.
Nice. So, before we wrap up here, I just want to tell you guys something interesting. So while we were recording, I told you we're recording live from the Effort of Lobby, and I got Empire Strikes Back, and we've been recording for a little over an hour. And unlike previous episodes, not one single person from the show has come out.
They're just glued to the screen, man.
Is it? I mean, I'm serious. Like, that's interesting. Like, you show Sonic or Onward or some of these other movies that, you know, sort of run in the movies. Kids are coming out and using the bathroom. People are coming out, getting a snack. And I've even had people come out and check their phones in the lobby or whatever. And, you know, but I think it speaks, like, I mean, I'm not trying to be over dramatic, but I'm just saying, like, Empire Strikes Back, man, we have an audience in there and they're in there, man. And I can hear the soundtrack coming through the walls, and it's awesome.
Nice.
I love having this title in the building. It's just so cool.
That's awesome. Well, next
week. All right. So next week, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, starring Steve Martin. It's a hokey, cheesy comedy noir type of film.
Ooh.
I'm going to be really interested to see what you think. And frankly, I'm also going to be interested to see what I think. Because I bet you it's not an exaggeration to say that it's been 20 years since I saw this movie.
Okay.
If not longer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, here we go. We're diving in deep. Hey, if you want to let us know what you think of Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid or anything else we talked about this week, best way to do that is to hit us up at podcast@penncinema.com. We're both listening. We're both responding, so you can find us over there. And if you want to help out the show, number one way to do that, how can people do that, Penn?
Hey, you could just tell a friend.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a friend, tell us.
Tell us.
We're your friends. You could tell us. You tell us anything.
We'll act surprised. We're the kind of friends that'll support you even when you're saying weird things.
Right.
Right?
Totally. If you have like a quirky, questionable idea and you need somebody to be like, dude, that sounds awesome, man. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm that guy. If you need someone to like talk sense into you and like everybody should have like a cold water friend who like tells them like, nah, dude, don't come on. That's gonna be a problem.
Yeah.
But I'm not that guy. I'm the guy you call when you want someone. There's an expression. I don't know if you've ever heard this expression, but when you want someone to co-sign your bullshit, I'm that guy. When you need someone to be like, yeah, man, that's a great idea. That sounds like a hoot.
Oh, my God.
You should definitely take your pickup truck and drive to Canada. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, why not?
You're gonna repaint your living room purple? Awesome.
Podcast@penncinema.com for Penn support. That's why Drew's copied in to be our cold water, so we don't get involved in anything.
So I don't start making promises I can't keep. Yeah, if you need your wacky idea, if you need support for your questionable ideas.
Awesome. Well, once again, for the Penn Cinema Podcast, I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum.
Take care
and
party on.
I feel like you were on that back just to be off the happy.
I was trying to get you on point.
Thanks for joining us this episode. Our hosts would love to hear from you. To contact the show with your thoughts and reviews, email podcast@penncinema.com. This podcast is a production of Penn Cinema. Escape to the movies at Penn Cinema, featuring crisp digital projection, killer sound, reserved seating, and premium power recliners. With locations in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Wilmington, Delaware, and Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania. Showtimes and tickets available at www.penncinema.com.